Hello, I'm Oliver Wang.
And I'm Morgan Rold. You're listening to Heat Rocks.
Every episode, we invite a guest to join us to talk about a heat rock, an album that burns them deep in their soul. And today, we will be spinning the wheel back to the year 2000, Y2K, when Erykah Badu released her sophomore album, Mama's Gun.
Dragon on a bed by day.
Erykah Badu began putting together Mama's Gun in 1999, 2 years after she had exploded onto the scene with Baduism, the album that catapulted her into the standard bearer for what would become known as neo-soul. While Mama's Gun didn't reach the same commercial success as that first LP, it only deepened the critical regard that people had for Badu, as her sophomore effort was seen as being more mature, more sophisticated, and to quote my friend Daphne Brooks, writing for Pitchfork, it was, quote, a thrilling moment of growth and possibility.
To talk about Mama's Gun, we invited singer-songwriter and my homegirl, formerly of Atlanta, now representing L.A., Bosco.
Hello.
She's the creator of Slug Agency, a consulting group for young millennials of color, giving them visibility, bringing them to the light. She's had a great, great year on the strength of a couple of sync placements on shows like Insecure and Queen Sugar, doing it. Her new album is called B, and it's got one of the hottest tracks I've heard this year called Castles, featuring her and Saint Beauty. Hold up, wait a minute. Baby, baby, are you listening? I go and you go, but I don't ever want to see your face on no, no. We go back a long ways to 2009 when I had the good fortune.
Wow.
Of seeing, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've been around. I had the good fortune of stumbling on an EP that featured a song called City of Nowhere.
Oh, and, wow. You really?
Yeah. Way back. I was a young DJ on KPFK, found that, and I wore it out. All the way out. So I'm glad that you were able to join Oliver and I, and welcome to Heat Rocks.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this.
Okay.
How were you introduced to Erykah Badu?
I think it was one of those Saturday mornings. I was babysitting, and Apple Tree came on. That was during the time where Walmart would drop things at like midnight. At the time, I was too young to really understand what I was seeing, but it just felt warm. It felt familiar. And I identified visually with somebody that looked like me as like a 11, 12, 13. I can't remember how old I was back then, but I was like, oh, holy shit, this woman thing looks like me, and it just felt good. So, yeah.
This is when you were still living in or outside of Atlanta?
Savannah.
Savannah. Okay.
I'm originally from Savannah, Georgia. I moved to Atlanta right out of college.
At the time, did you know that Erykah was from the South, from Texas, or did that matter to you at all in terms of that identification that you're talking about?
I feel like I was too young to really even know a lot of that, but I didn't know that she was in the South until I think Mama's Gun.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So speaking of that album, I mean, you could have chosen anything out of that incredible catalog that she has. Why go with Mama's Gun?
I felt like during that time, I was learning about myself. I was learning about music. It was also during the time, I think it was the Roots. I was like one of those kids in college. I would go to the library and just like dig for files. And that's when people will be passing out like people's rehearsal tapes, demos during that time, and it's like, yo, you heard the new Nicki Jean, or you heard the new J. Davy rehearsals. I'm like, nah, but put me on. So we'll be in like the library, like swapping albums. So that was like the beginning of me learning this genre. It was like I was exposed to like the underground for the first time, living in Savannah, Georgia. So from there, I think it was like D'Angelo, Common, and then I was introduced to this project just by like digging with the artists that I was listening to at the time.
We're obviously going to get much deeper into the album, but I'm just wondering in terms of where this album exists within, again, the greater kind of pantheon of Erykah Badu albums. What is it about this particular album that has resonated with you? Is it because of how you discovered, you know, where you were in life then? Is it something about the kind of inherent content?
It was more the language. It was her language. It was what she was saying. It was her approach to the music. How the horns, she would have a whole horn section. Like, people really wasn't doing that. It kind of puts me in the mind of, like, Sly and the Family Stones, the Gap Band, where people were just really doing, you know, musical arrangements from bridges to interludes. Like, she was able to kind of, like, the green eyes transition the song into a whole nother, you know, moment. As a young creative and musician, that was something that I was longing for. I knew that I liked it, but I didn't know how to get there. But I knew that she would be the person to introduce me to the sound, and I just began to grow with her as an artist. And I feel like now that I'm mature and I'm a woman, I can actually like go back and process these songs where I am, and I was able to grow with her into this now.
Yeah.
Were you aware of any of the changes, either in production styles or personally, that Erykah had gone through between Baduism and Mama's Gun? Did you know of Erykah or start listening to Erykah around Baduism, or was Mama's Gun?
Baduism.
Baduism.
Yeah. Other Side of the Game was the song that changed my life. Because it was during a time, I don't know if it was like Cedar's World or BET. It was like Apple Tree. Apple Tree came on. And then when the horns came on the other side of the game in the video, I was like, okay, what is this?
Were you aware of what was going on in music? Because certainly Erykah has been credited as one of the trailblazers, one of the pioneers of neo-soul, and neo-soul is the father of future soul. So were you aware of how R&B was starting to shift the change?
Yeah, for sure. That was like during the time, it was like Jimmy Posey, what, Posier, or it was also, like I said, Roots,
Jill Scott,
Joy, Dungeon Family. I know it was neo soul, but I think I really didn't really understand it till Dave Chappelle actually presented it in a film. Like,
oh, interesting.
That's how, because I'm a visual person, so I had to see like it all packaged. I don't know what that movie that came out
was,
maybe
it the
10 years
party?
Ago.
Yeah,
the Block Party. So that was the first representation visually of what the movement was.
We get in our Cadillac, like we always do, and we go drive, go golfing. Next thing you know, we see Dave Chappelle.
Do you like rap music?
Will y'all come to my block party in New York?
It's in Brooklyn on Saturday.
Oh! Ain't nothing like a James Brown hit to set the mood. Hit me. See? Hit me again. That's right. Hit me.
These are the golden tickets. We really want longer than give out.
To me, Bilal, I was introduced to Bilal during that time. That was when Jill Scott and Erykah first did Don't Worry together.
For the Roots.
Yeah, for the Roots.
Shout out, y'all.
If you were worried about me, I've been on who I saw.
I've been on who I saw.
Oh, oh, oh. I to my homies.
Baby, don't worry.
Oh, oh, oh.
And I don't know, it was an awakening for me as a musician to witness that during that time.
I'm curious to hear from either or both of you. In terms of the term neo-soul itself, I think it both serves as a useful shorthand. In other words, the term itself communicates a particular sound, obviously a community of artists, as Bosco's putting out. But it does also run the danger of seeming like a bit of a genre gimmick as well. And I'm wondering where each of you fall on sort of the utility, I guess, of neo-soul as a term. Because it's something that a lot of the artists who get tagged with it, I don't think they really embrace it for that exact reason.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think the reason why it was introduced was to make the distinction between classical R&B or vintage R&B and what we thought was new, and these new voices that were sort of experimenting with jazz and hip-hop. It was sort of a soul outgrowth of it. Think about A Tribe Called Quest being a soul group.
Yeah.
That was the sound of the time.
Right. Let's take a listen to one of the more neo-soul moments on the album. This is Erykah Badu doing Clever. Are you trying to lock it down?
This is how I look without makeup, and with no bra, mine ain't it sag down low. My hair ain't never hung down.
This song reminds me of like a modern Don't Touch My Hair, or I think Pretty Hurts, or it reminds me of like SZA, Normal Girl. Mm. Like what she's talking about was the language of that time, but our artists are talking about just, I wish you can take me on to your mama, the kind of girl you can be proud of. Like,
wish I was the type of girl that you take a booty mama, the type of girl I know my daddy, he'd be proud of. Be proud of, I'll be proud of, I'll be proud, you know. I wanna be the type of girl you take him to your mama.
This is how I look without makeup, right? And I don't have no problem. My nini sat down low. It's like the same language, just of this time. And I feel like that's why she's still mom. That's why she's still so relevant to people like Tyler, the Creator, Solange. Like, she was able to plant the seed that keeps growing. Like, she's a planter. She's like a true farmer to me.
For sure. Yeah. And Clev is a great song to talk about, because it's a song about self-awareness and self-empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a very forward-thinking awareness on this album, which for me is one of the reasons why I classify it as a heat rock. One of the other reasons is because of the production. I mean, the album had a ton of OGs on here. Like, I mean, like, it's not even fair how many.
Right?
You're like, wow, if you had only had Dilla, it would have been great. But she had Dilla. She had Victor Duplay. She had Roy Hargrove.
Yeah.
She had Roy Ayers. You know what I'm saying? She had James Poyser. She had Questlove. She had Pino Palladino. Come on. So the album.
Squad.
Come on now. Part of that production team were folks that would go on to form the Soulquarians, right? And so, I mean, It, to me, it was just like, it's just like having a team of a ton of starters, and it prepared us for a sound that we would see again and hear again with Common Like Water for Chocolate, and also D'Angelo Voodoo, this sort of throwback, the sample-y thing. Mm-hmm. It sounded like you had been listening to records, sitting around listening to records. It was warm, and it was one of those albums that could play from start to finish. And to your point, there were songs within a song. Green Eyes is 10 minutes and 15 seconds long.
Yeah.
And there's two halves of that song.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about horns and stuff and the production being warm. When you listened to the album again in prep for the interview, what else jumped out at you about the production, the sound of this album?
It was a certain, I feel like the beginning of the project was very bright, but once we got to like Orange Moon, there was this bold quietness or this stillness and who she was as an artist, who she was as a mother. And, you know, just having that transition from being an artist to a mother and adjusting to that, I feel like the instrumentation and just times of wasting and how she was able to talk to the black man and but yet encourage them all at the same time. And
times of wasting. Don't you take your time, young man. Keep on drifting. Ain't no telling where you'll land.
I feel like it was a very intimate relationship between the instruments towards the latter part of the project, a sense of freedom, self-discovery, the first signs of self-care. Mm. The first signs of, like, wellness. And she was so wise back then to go ahead and tell my mom to tell me to stop putting a perm in that girl.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the kind of spirit, that's the kind of seeds that she was sowing. I saw her at a FYF fest, and she was like,
I was there.
She was like, I could finally talk to y'all now that y'all done grew up. I'm like,
right. Because I was at that show, and she was like, she did the roll call. She was like, where's my 80s babies at? Where's my 70s? She was like, where's my 90s babies? And that's the average age at FYF was like 22, right? And she was like, I was waiting for y'all to grow up and to be able to listen to this.
That's the best. That's
awesome.
So how many of y'all are having y'all first Badu live experience right now? I'm so happy to accommodate you. So I want to catch you up on what's been going on from 97 to right now. We haven't seen each other since y'all was sucking my titty. So...
Audre Lorde said, caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare. And I think part of this album that appeals to me so much is it was Black Girl Magic before we had coined that term.
Yeah.
It was everything that we look for today as Black women, as affirming each other, complimenting each other, encouraging each other on this steps, on this journey to grown-ass womanness.
Yeah.
And there are several roads to get to there. Ain't no half-stepping to get there. Shout out to Heat Wave and Big Daddy Kane. Brother, ain't no half-stepping. And I think this was sort of a long album about coming to know yourself.
It's very interesting that of all the albums that we've talked about on Heat Rocks that we've already aired and that our listeners will be hearing in the weeks to come, a lot of people have picked sophomore albums, and maybe that's just a coincidence, but when Bosco said she wanted to talk about Mama's Gun, I'm like, there's another second album. And the thing about the second album is the first album, right, is you have worked for years to get that opportunity. So, it's condensing like a whole lifetime there.
Yeah.
The second album is what happens after you've had that initial success in many cases. I mean, if we were going to pluck one song to kind of illustrate that, it would be the sequel to On and On, which is sort of ellipsis, ampersand on, right?
Yeah, yeah.
One, two, one, two. Now on and on and on and on. Wake the fuck up, cause it's been too long. Say, wait a minute, queen, what's your name? See, I be the gypsy flipping life game from the right brain. Ascension maintained, rolling through like a burning flame.
I just had forgotten how much of it is about her responding to her own stardom. It's a very meta song because On and On is what blew her up in 97.
Wow. Yeah.
And this is sort of, all right, here's where I've been the last 3 years. And let me tell you what people have been saying about me.
Right.
Like, I was like, wow, she was really going deep on this one.
And I wish I knew, like, who did the beat for this? Because this beat is just so hard. It was hard on the original On and On, and it's hard on this response song.
It certainly sounds, I mean, it's very Silquarian. I mean, 1,000%.
Badu, Badu, Pisces, well, I'm raising hell.
This was also during a Renaissance area where people were playing instruments. Like, this is not production. Like, I do like the sampling aspect and quality of this project, but I feel like now, Like you said, people like Moses Sumney, people like Solange, people like the era of musicianship was so important.
Oliver, can you talk a little bit about, for those that may not know what the Soulquarians were, can you talk a little bit more about the group?
I mean,
about the collective?
You mentioned it already, Morgan. I mean, you basically name-checked every person in the group. I mean, primarily we're talking about Questlove, we're talking about D'Angelo, we're talking about J Dilla, and... What I didn't realize, and it makes sense in hindsight, is that as Erica was working on this album, this was being done in Electric Ladyland, which was Jimi Hendrix's old studio in Manhattan. And the Soulquarians were simultaneously working on Mama's Gun, D'Angelo's Voodoo, and Common's Like Water for Chocolate. And if you listen to those three albums back to back to back, it makes complete sense. I mean, you can hear all of the energy happening. But what I would give to be a fly on the wall in that studio during those, I don't know, half year or whatever that they were crossing over, just imagine the sheer amount of talent coming in and out of there, and people kind of throwing ideas against the wall with each other. We'll be back with more of our conversation with Bosco about Erykah Badu's Mama's Gun after a brief word from a couple of our other great Max Fun podcasts. Keep it locked.
Hi, everybody. I'm Justin McElroy.
And I'm Dr. Sydney McElroy.
Every week, we release a medical history podcast called Sawbones.
We go over the history of the dumbest, grossest, weirdest stuff humans have been doing to each other since the dawn of mankind.
But it's a funny show.
But it's also so disgusting and stomach-turning, you won't believe it.
But it's also like, funny. It's funny.
It is the wildest, grossest, nastiest stuff you can imagine.
It's a real hoot. It's called Sawbones, and we release it every week on iTunes, wherever podcasts are sold, and right here on MaximumFun.org.
Hey, Max Fun listeners. It's Jesse, the founder of MaximumFun.org. I have some pretty incredible holiday news for you. So you remember last year's Max Fun Drive? We offered pins for all of our shows to folks who donated. And we agreed to donate all of the net revenue from the pins to the Los Angeles Regional Food Bank. Well, I just yesterday had the chance to hand a giant check to a representative from the food bank. And you're not going to believe how much money you gave to give needy families food. Over $100,000. $100,365. Be specific. That means nearly half a million meals for families who need food this year. I'm really proud of every single Maximum Fund donor who made this possible. It's a remarkable achievement, a beautiful thing. It completely obliterated my idea and expectation of what we might be able to do this year. So, as you head into 2018, please be proud of what this amazing community did for hungry families in the Los Angeles area where Max Fun is based. If you'd like to keep the love rolling, go to lafoodbank.org/maximumfun. That's lafoodbank.org/maximumfun, and you can make a tax-deductible donation there. Every dollar that you give means four meals for needy families. Thanks to all of you who support everything that we do, and thanks for your incredible contribution to folks who need it here in our hometown.
Scared to wake up, don't wanna lose my son.
We're back on Heat Rocks talking about Erykah Badu's Mama's Gun with Bosco, whose song Free is playing in the background right now. We've been talking about the sound of the album, but we can get into the politics of the album, too. And you mentioned earlier that Erykah, you know, had love for brothers. The great song, The Other Side of the Game, she says, I understand the game.
Yes.
I understand the game, you know.
Sometimes.
Exactly. But my love is strong. Like, so you, I know what you got to do, what you got to do.
Yeah.
And on Penitentiary Philosophy, she's understanding brothers on the corner.
Here's my philosophy. Living in the penitentiary. Brothers all on the corner trying to make believe. Turn around and got no pride to be made.
What I like about your song Free is that you mentioned the struggle. You mentioned this could be your father, your brother, your cousin. The politics of the album, one of the standout tracks is AD 2000, which was written about Amadou Diallo.
Say you won't be naming no buildings after me. Go down dilapidated. No. Building's after me, my name.
shot by police multiple times. And this album is 17 years old.
Yeah.
It's 17 years old. And the themes present on AD 2000, we are still...
Still.
It's 17 years later. Were you aware of the politics? Were you aware of what was going on in terms of what she was discussing at the time?
Not really. I guess during that age, I was only aware of just like racism, as in the way they look at me, or people not, you know, wanting to let me and my grandfather pass them or just hold the door. But I really didn't see that, or I wasn't, I guess, quote unquote, woke. But like I said, she had a way of just making you feel like she knew what she was talking about. You knew what she was talking about because it felt so familiar.
Bosco made the earlier point about Orange Moon, about their, I think that you had a lovely turn of phrase about it, but almost sort of like it was kind of aggressively acoustic.
Turned away and he stood alone every night and every day.
Which seems like a contradiction. It's very quiet, but the quietness is very forceful, right? Which doesn't sound like it should make any sense.
Right.
But I feel like AD 2000 has that same thing.
Quality,
and those two songs, I'm pretty sure, come back to back on the album.
Yeah, they do.
And so, you know, to Bosco's point about sort of how the album is sequenced, she's definitely purposely playing with the sound and what you experience listening to it as you move through the album.
In addition to songs like Clever, what I like about Erica's awareness is her awareness of her own needs, particularly in songs like Kiss Me on My Neck.
How somebody woke up behind me and kissed me on my neck and breathe on my neck. How somebody woke up behind me.
It is a song about this is what I need, this is what I want. And I love that so much. I got a chance to see her perform it live at the House of Blues. And I remember looking at the person next to me like, this is a jam. It's just, it's so cool, but it's so vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is what I need. It doesn't lament about being single. It just goes straight to the point of what I need.
That's, but it also eliminates the whole victim kind of, you know, personality behind it, because as women we feel so vulnerable,
right?
But we don't want to always ask, but we don't want to put them in a position to make them feel like lesser than,
right?
So her, like you said, her approach of just having it just cool, like, this is what it is.
Exactly.
What's up?
Exactly.
What's up?
Exactly. I'm not gonna wax, you know, go on wax poetic about how my emotional needs are, but basically it's been such a long time I forgot that I was fine. That's just such a, I mean, that's just such a cool, and that's a lot of our struggle.
Yeah.
That, you know, when you're in between, stages,
hey.
I can say that, you know what I'm saying? You're not feeling as lit as you might have once been.
Yeah.
But then the flip side of that is the song Booty.
Got a whole lot of junk on your trunk. But your nigga think I'm live and I keep him crunk. I don't want it.
To me, it just blows my mind about this album, where she was emotionally, spiritually, at a really young age.
Also, I think I would like to almost compare it to Lauryn Hill, how she was so far ahead of her time in subject matter, femininity, feminism, just her place in the industry. If we just kind of mirror these projects with the age and where they stand, I feel like they both or speaking the same thing, but with on maybe different opposite sides of the spectrum. You know, the musicality, you know, the instruments that she used, and, you know, just vice versa, stuff like that, too.
We've been talking about a lot of different songs off this album, but Bosco, do you have a fire track off of Mama's Gun?
It's Green Eyes.
Oh.
Green Eyes.
I'm insecure, but I can't.
Why this song?
I relate to the vulnerability. I relate to the fact that she can admit, like, I fucked up in the beginning of the song. Like, I feel like this song is a tide or a current. Like, she admits, like, this is how I feel. It might not be right, but this, I'm just being honest. But then she comes back around when the song changes. It was like, you know what? I'm sorry. I love you. It hurts me. You told me you love me too. So it's just, as a woman, we sometimes, people don't admit, or we are scared to admit that we're wrong, because we're seen as, we nurture, we hold it down, but we can sometimes fall through the cracks. And she was like, this is the end of the project. This is, you know, I got my bags too. What's up? But that whole resolve and her admitting and facing her reflection, that's what she spoke. She spoke a lot about reflection in this project between her and, I guess, her and whoever her intimate lover or partner was at the time.
I mean, the song is an arc. You got 10 minutes of the seven stages of grief. Yeah. You go from, I don't know the order, but there's certainly all of them, denial, acceptance, anger, fear. And she takes you on that journey of, I'm insecure, I'm jealous, and jealousy's hard to admit.
Yeah.
To the implication is that this person has moved on. Mm-hmm. I like the metaphor.
Yeah.
And she actually does have green eyes, so it works.
So good.
And, you know, a question that we sort of ask at the beginning, but I just want to know, why, what makes this a heat rock for you? What makes this a hot album for you?
It's one of the first projects besides, I think, like, either Michael Jackson or Prince, where I was like, this is what true musicianship sounds like. This is what it feels like. When I die, when I want to go down in history, I want to be able to have a body of work like this. The players who she was able to collaborate with, to write with, even her personal style changing through this whole process is what I wish and strive to create.
Mm. What's the sleeper track?
This one?
What's the track that people are, like, really missing but is true fire, though?
I really like all of them. I can't even front, because, like, we haven't even talked about In Love With You.
That's when he took my heart in his hand to kiss it gently. Said his poetry, I'm in love with you, love with you, love with you, love with you, love with you.
So what is it about this song that you want to talk about?
I feel like this was her pillow talk song. Like, you know, that morning after, that, like, stink breath. I'm in here with you. I love you. No, I'm in love with you. Like,
right.
I feel like this was her, like, all right, this is, I don't have my bonnet on kind of vibe.
Real.
It's
real.
Yeah.
I think it's also worth pointing out, besides just her songwriting, that a lot of the work that Erica does is just with her voice. I mean, when you first heard her come out in 97, that's the first thing that grabbed you, because it had a little bit of that kind of Billie Holiday burr to it, a little old-timey, but not trying to be crazy retro.
Right.
And she's always kept it that. And the way in which she just inflects these little words with that, I mean, so signature. You're not going to confuse her for anybody else.
No, yeah.
To be my soldier, so baby, come on. I mean it desperately. I'm in love with you, love with you.
Anything that either of you have to say about just sort of the sound of Erica's voice and what it does for you and what it makes you think of?
It's hard to be inimitable. It's hard to be distinct. She's distinct. To Oliver's point, nobody sounds like Erica. And that she can flip it a little bit, because right? She's an MC.
That's not forget.
Come on now. And has bars.
We don't get to hear enough of them, though.
Maybe she just needs a straight-ahead rap album.
I'm saying.
I mean, a mixtape.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
true.
I've
been going through it all. Like her cover of that.
Ooh.
That was so good. All I wanted was the ball. Like, she killed that song.
I've been going through it all.
Yeah.
Back all against the wall. Trying hard not to fall.
Yeah.
All I wanted was the ball.
Right.
I've been going through it all. Yeah. Back all against the wall. I only get one call. Yeah. Who the fuck do I call? Tyrone. I ain't got no friends. Right. All of God is my fam. If you don't really give a fuck.
Bosco, as a singer yourself, I mean, you have to think about your inflection and how you're using the voice and molding these words. What is it that you hear in what Erica does with her instrument?
I like her tails, like how she like goes up on some notes.
Yes.
It kind of reminds me of like the trumpet with the thing on it.
Yes.
On the right. Like the pitch. Yeah, what do they call that?
You know, it's like a, it looks like a toilet plunger almost.
Because in the beginning of Green Eyes, it sounds like she's singing through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like one of those.
Like a wah wah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Very juke joint.
My eyes are green.
So we know what your fire track is. We know at least one of your sleeper songs. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, you know, much earlier that you have covered some of Erica's stuff. If you had to pick a track off of here to cover, and maybe that seems sacrosanct to you, but if you had to, what would you want to take on?
Orange Moon's another one. It's like a still water in the beginning of it, and how it just builds and builds and builds, and it comes back down again, like the tide.
Mm.
I don't know. I keep coming back to water with her, water and tide. Cause it's like, it'll come behind and she'll come back. It's low tide. And then she'll come back and she'll resolve again.
Pisces, too. And she said she was born underwater. Yeah. So water is a recurrent theme.
Yeah.
If we're going to be using water metaphors and we think about the tide coming in and out, as Bosco was saying a moment ago, the thing about Erica and her output is that when the tide goes out, it stays out for quite a while.
Yep.
I mean, she's had maybe – and I count the 2015 mixtape that Bosco, you were mentioning a moment ago, which was all about – what was it called? Use My Phone, which was fantastic and came out of nowhere. It felt like Drake had his hot song. I'm just going to make a whole album mixtape in response to it and just kind of throw it out there even though I haven't put out music in X amount of years.
I can make you put your phone down. I can make you, I can make you, I can make you put your phone down. I can make you put your phone down.
She does not record very often, and I don't hold that against her at all. Though I'm wondering, as fans, and Bosco specifically for you as a fan of her music, you know, how do you feel about the fact that her output does seem, it's not so much even inconsistent as it is unpredictable?
I feel like we're still digesting what she gave us.
Ooh, that's a good answer.
I'm still uncovering her catalog. Mm. Like, if I'm just getting, like, really understanding this, like, I'm still learning her catalog, just like I'm still learning Prince, just like how Lauryn Hill still can tour off of one project. I know she's not the best at live shows.
That's a whole other episode.
You know, but... I mean, I'm still digesting, you know, their work. So I'm not too mad. Yes, I would like more, but she's on the road enough for me to be cool.
Mm-hmm.
And she reaches out, like, she reaches back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. She always knows what's going on. She's always bigging people up, co-signing. So that's cool for me.
And as you witnessed, as I did at FYF, she just had so many hits.
Yeah, it's cool.
That you stand up there for so long, but you realize, man, but that's because she has so many hits. She's got such a vast catalog. She's able to flip some things. And to your point, I think there are songs that I'm still taking in. The other day I was listening to American Promise, and I was like, this is hot. This is woke. It's dope. Just hot.
So I'm patient because I think every now and again she peeks her head out to remind you that
she's still queen.
Yeah, she's still ma. That's it. That's
she's
it.
Still ma.
And she does it quietly. There's no there's gonna be a surprise album. It just shows up and you're happy to have it. Mm-hmm. And if she never did anything again after Mama's Gun, for me, this is such a full and complete album. Yeah. That if she had never done anything after this would have been enough for me. As
Worldwide Underground was good too.
If you had to describe Mama's Gun in three words, what would those three words be?
Whimsical, textured, honest.
Whimsical, textured, and honest. I like that.
I do too.
Yeah. That'll do it for this episode of Heat Rocks with our special guest, Bosco. Her most recent release is B on Fool's Gold. Bosco, where can people find you out there?
iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, any streaming services.
And how about you?
Hello Bosco Instagram, hellobosco.com, and that's all my handles.
You working on anything new now? I know you have the new album, but you got anything else cooking?
Yeah, I'm putting out something with Adult Swim pretty soon.
Oh, nice.
We're doing a few spot dates in December, towards the end of December, and just some new music as well.
Very cool.
You've been listening to Heat Rocks with me, Morgan Rhodes, and Oliver Wang. Our theme music is Crown Ones by Thess Uno. People Under the Stairs. Shout out to Thess for the hookup. Heat Rocks is produced by myself, Oliver Wang, and Kara Hart. And today's show was engineered by Nick Liao, edited and mixed by Kara. We are part of the Maximum Fun family, taping every week live in their analog and digital studios in the Westlake neighborhood of Los Angeles.
We wanted to very quickly thank a few folks out there, including Art Student Z and Ham Akatir, for their 5-star reviews on iTunes. If you are a fan of the show and have a quick minute, we would love for you to be able to leave a review for us. It really helps us build an audience.
We also want to shout out those that gave us some nice tweezies and retweezies.
Yes!
Including Dan Ryan, Noah McGee, Larry J. Morris, Positive Residual, that's dope, Spin So Nice, and Jonathan McQuarrie. We appreciate that love. Thank you. Yo, be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Heat Rocks Pod. You can find a link to our Facebook group on our webpage, heatrockspod.com. That's where we'll post show notes for every episode, including a track listing of everything you've heard today and more goodies. Again, that's at heatrockspod.com. Good to see you, Oliver.
Good to see you too, Morgan.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.